the intrusion that we think we're getting away with. And the reality of it is that long after we're gone, our imprint is still lingering. You can slip into a tree stand, and if your entry exit route is not good, you may get in there and not bump any deer and be like, oh, I made it in here good. I didn't bump anything out. I didn't educate any deer. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is when you come down and you walk back to your truck long after, if you're stomping around where those deer come and go throughout the night, throughout the day, you're educating deer. And people road hunt and they poach and they do things they shouldn't be doing. And that's what I was talking about a little bit earlier about, you know, find these little hole in the wall prairie spots with some cedars, man. Cedars, that's, hey, if you take anything from this podcast, find cedars, you'll find giant bucks. I think some of the smartest animals are those big old, you know, those old mama does, man. Like, you know, when you have doe family groups that live in a place you're hunting, you better not mess them up. Because when you do, big boy's not coming through anymore. Think about whitetails. Think of it like a bag of popcorn. You get those first early pops in the microwave, you know, pop, pop, pop. Those are your first few 5-10% does, right? Then you have, in a very short amount of time, pop, 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 you know, the whole bag dripping. And then on the backside of the bag, you're sitting there waiting to open up because, you know, there's going to be a few last pops and you want to get every last kernel, right? Hunt the first few pops, hunt the last few pops. And that will produce way bigger deer, way more consistently.
Welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. A couple things before we jump into this episode. Please, you heard me say a million times, go give us a review on iTunes. Helps me keep this podcast free and helps with the ratings. Also, go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. If you use our promo code, John Stallone, all one word, you save 20% off on anything. And it's not just shooting bags. They do glassing pads. They're working on some other really cool stuff coming up here for the hunter, bow hunters also. So go check them out, phoenixshootingbags.com. And if you're looking for a really good hunt, I have some really good opportunities for you. Hit us up on daysinthewild.com or check out my blog, johnstallone.me, and send us an email. If you're looking to do a coos deer hunt, javelina, mule deer in South Dakota, we got some opportunities in California as well. So give me a call if you're looking to do something different this year and like to get on a special hunt. Days in the Wild Outfitters, and we'll take care of you. Without further ado, let's jump into this episode. Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're going to continue on with our Lessons Learned series. I got one of my good buddies on the phone, Brant. What's going on, man?
Not much, man. Just talking about whitetails today. You got me all excited to do it.
Yeah, yeah. So one thing that I always loved about, and I'm hoping you're going to tell a story that is your approach to wind. And you're a... So you like to hunt whitetails, but you're also a western whitetail guy. I mean, you hunt in the Midwest too. I mean, you do some of the Midwest states, but you know, Colorado, Kansas, where else you get out? I know what you do. You do Nebraska too? I forgot.
Yeah. Most of my whitetails now are, you know, Kansas, Nebraska. Once in a while, I'll go hunt them in eastern Colorado, but my bread and butter is definitely in that Kansas and Nebraska area.
Yeah. It's a little different. It's like where the West meets the East. Or exactly. Where the West meets the Midwest, I should say.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. I have this. Well, I hunt South Dakota, so I'm real familiar with that topography and that style of hunting. It's kind of like, it's weird, man, because it's like everything goes. Like if you want to spot stalk them, you could spot stalk them. You want to hunt them out of tree stands. You want to rattle them in, you rattle them in. You want to call. I mean, it's kind of a neat area to hunt, I think. So.
It is. It's a unique type of hunting for sure. I mean, you're talking about a lot of prairie land ghosts, you know, that are just tucked away in the middle of these, you know, cattle ranches, essentially, where I think a lot of people get this misconception with whitetails that you just got to find them in the hardwoods and, you know, the biggest timbers got the biggest bucks and, mm-hmm. I can tell you, man. I mean, at least where I'm hunting, that couldn't be further from the truth. It's the spots that are overlooked.
Yeah.
You know, it's the spots that a little hole in the wall in the middle of the prairie away from any road. And, that's where we find the biggest deer.
Yep, absolutely. Well, before we jump into your stories here, why don't you give us a little rundown about yourself?
Yeah, sure, man. I grew up hunting. I started hunting at the age of 9 when I moved to Colorado. I started getting into archery hunting pretty heavy when I was about 19, 20 years old, really getting after it. I killed my first BNC whitetail. I think that's kind of where the addiction took hold with whitetails. And I like chasing everything, sheep, deer, you know, whiteys, muleys, elk,
yep.
Bears, whatever I can get a tag for in whatever state I can apply, you know, apply and draw.
Right.
We know how those odds play out. But whitetails, I was 17 years old. I killed my first buck with a rifle. And I got the taste of it, and it was in a place that you would not think there were whitetails. I mean, there wasn't a tree for miles. It was literally in the basically rolling sand yucca country of eastern Colorado where you just wouldn't believe there's whitetails in there. And killed my first booner buck in there. He was 172. And said, man, I really like these whitetails. It's just like it's always been for me like a chess match. Each buck is independent. They're different. I'm not talking about just trying to kill, you know, a 1 or 2 year old buck. I'm talking about chasing a really wise animal. And like I said, I love hunting muleys and elk and everything else, but there's something about whitetails, man. Like they're just so unforgiving, but yet they're so aggressive.
You know,
if there's intrusion, they don't put up with it. But then when they're in their own element, there's this sense of just anger, you know, especially during the rut. Big guys come out and they're snort wheezing and they just, man, I just love the wittiness about them, the toughness of the animal. And, they got a special place for me, man. That's where I grew up, you know, really, really loving chasing big whitetails. I started bow hunting them in 2008. And to be honest with you, I think I just got super lucky. I killed a low mid 140s deer November 8th, one of my favorite days to hunt whitetails with a bow. Mm-hmm. But I think I stumbled into some luck on that. You know, I was just blessed that I was hunting a pretty good spot. Didn't really know a whole lot about bow hunting whitetails, you know, stuff you can read and watch and try to apply it yourself. But 2009 is when the serious archery addiction took hold as far as chasing whitetails with a bow. I killed, at the time, it was my biggest whitetail, 176 inch 8-point with my bow on, go figure, November 8th again.
Mm-hmm.
2 years in a row back to back. That for a long time was my favorite day to hunt whitetails. And it's changed a little bit since then, but we'll get into that more. But I'll tell you what, I mean, it was kind of, I don't know. I mean, I'm very blessed that I was able to kill that deer, but it was almost like a little bit of a curse because you're afforded success a couple years back to back. One Pope and Young, another that's, you know, going to go BNC. And you kind of start getting this little bit of false confidence, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, oh, this isn't that hard. This is, I just sit in the right. You know, I did a lot of scouting on that 2009 deer a lot. Banged on a lot of doors, knocked a lot, made a lot of phone calls. I put myself in some positions to be in some really good spots, but to have that caliber of deer walk by, even with all the cameras I had, I never had pictures of that deer, but to kill that deer after, I think I was only hunting 3 or 4 days at that time into my hunt, and I killed that buck, and it spoiled me, man, I'll be honest with you, and I had some hard years, and I know we're going to talk about lessons learned in the field, and there's no animal I've hunted more than whitetails,
mm-hmm.
and I'm excited to share some of these stories with you, but it was back-to-back. I was coming off a couple hard back-to-back years in 2010 and 2011, just getting my butt kicked pretty good and really having to take a look inward and saying, what am I doing wrong? Like, this is not what it looked to be the first couple seasons. You know, I'm scratching tags first few days, killing good bucks, and then I had some humble pie that that really kind of, you know, and I guess when you get to that point, you're going to do one of a couple things. You really have 3 options. Either keep doing what you're doing and hope you luck into another good deer,
right,
or give up hunting them with some seriousness, like just basically throw in the towel and say, I'm not that committed. I'll just maybe go hunt them once in a while, or, you know, really amp up your game and really, really dive in. I think a lot of times hunters, I know myself included, when I was younger, for sure, I used to make excuses of why a hunt wasn't successful, you know, and
right,
some of the things are, I mean, there's things that make a hunt harder, right? The moon phase, the temperature, I'm hunting the wrong days of the rut. I mean, there's no doubt about that, but I've taken a new take during those dry years of hunting whitetails, you know, 2010, 11, going into 2012, which I'll share with you in a minute. But I took a lot into that as, you know, what can I do better? I mean, yeah, some things aren't going my way, but, you know, the thing about whitetail hunting, and it's really any hunting, but especially with how weary these bucks are, that we're talking about chasing those 4, 5, 6 year old or older bucks, there's no forgiveness there. No. And a lot of people, I think, forget the intrusion, which will lead into my 2012 story, but the intrusion that we think we're getting away with. And the reality of it is that long after we're gone, our imprints is still lingering.
Mm-hmm.
You can slip into a tree stand, and if your entry-exit route is not good, you may get in there and not bump any deer and be like, oh, I made it in here good. I didn't bump anything out. I didn't educate any deer. Mm-hmm. But the reality of it is when you come down and you walk back to your truck long after, if you're stomping around where those deer come and go throughout the night, throughout the day, you're educating deer. And when you're ready, we'll get into that 2012 season. But I was coming in off of a couple really, really tough years. Didn't even fling an arrow 2010, 2011. And so we'll just get into 2012 when you're ready. But that's basically my take on whitetails, the addiction I was getting. I was getting my ass kicked pretty good that I said, you know
what? You want to hear my take on that? What I listened to everything you said. Well, one, I want to start off by saying that it was funny because you said it's a chess match, right?
Mm-hmm.
And today, for some reason, I don't know why I was thinking about it. And I was like, elk hunting's like a football game. Mule deer hunting, mm-hmm. it's like a soccer game. You know, there's...
Yep.
There's a lot of physicality, but it's not as aggressive, and there's a little bit more finesse and trickery and ball play, whatever. But whitetail hunting, I mean, it can be, especially if you're hunting coos deer or whatever, you can get a physical hunt, you can do a mountain hunt, do spot and stalk, mm-hmm. or whatever. But for the most part, it's a mental game, right? It's a chess match.
It is
matching wits, not necessarily. Can I hook up this ridge fast enough to get ahead of that deer or you know, whatever. That was one takeaway. And the other takeaway I heard is, yeah, you got lucky because, and I might be wrong 100%, but it sounds like you took some great bucks right off the bat because you were hunting good ground, not because necessarily you had it figured out. And you spent time, you know what I'm saying? You spent time.
I'll give you the key to success for whitetails, man. I tell people a lot. Well, two things. When you say mental game, there's nothing more true than that. I've hunted whitetails with numerous people, and I'll tell you, people that would be hard charging in the mountains up to go run up the next mountain, go up 10 mountains looking mm-hmm. for the right bull, they fold. It's the mental game when you're stuck on a 2-foot by 2-foot tree stand. I'm talking. Most of my whitetail hunting is out of a tree stand because my hunting game plan is done months in advance. Mm-hmm. I think about whitetails 5-6 days a week, probably every day, honestly. what can I do better? How can even with a great plan, how can I make it even better and even better than that? So I'm constantly running through, you know, situations. But so most of my time, at least for my style of hunting for big whitetails, is I'm a ghost. Mm-hmm. You don't see me coming. You don't know I'm there. And I'm going after the biggest buck on the property. That's my style. So when I say a mental game, when you're stuck on a 2-foot by 2-foot platform and you need to be hunting basically every minute, like, hey, you need to be out there hunting. Like, there's no coming down for a snack or let's go grab lunch. The only time I climb out of a tree stand is mm-hmm. if the wind changes.
Right.
And it's a grind, man. I know guys that are excellent hunters that can't do it. They'll sit there for a couple hours, see some movement, and they're like, I'm done. I can't do
it. It's definitely not for everybody.
Yep.
So, and it's funny, depending where I'm hunting, like I could go back east and sit in a tree stand all day, no problem. Just because I know it works and I know, but you couldn't get me to sit, you know, 4 hours in a tree stand here in Arizona. Even though I know if I did, I probably could be successful with it.
Right.
I've had success. I've killed deer out of tree stands here.
Oh man, it's
so, and
tough.
I could kill elk too.
It's tough for a guy who does it all the time.
Yeah,
it's tough for me. I mean,
no,
you sit there and when you're getting your teeth kicked in, you know, a couple, 2, 3, 4 days in a row, and you're not seeing any mature bucks.
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you, man, especially on the backside of that bell curve, on the backside of the peak rut, and there's just very little movement now because most of those does have been bred. Man, oh man, it's tough to get up at 4:30 every morning and sit there all day.
Yeah.
You start running out of stuff to think about, you know?
Yep.
But I was going to touch base on something else. It's a short little equation I tell people. I'm like, time and location equals success. You can hunt the best farm in Iowa, the best farm in Kansas, the best farm in the country, and you may kill one the first day out, but you have got to put in the time. You can hunt the best place there is, but if you don't put in the adequate amount of time, you're not going to kill the best deer in there. If you don't hunt a good spot that has the genetics and the age class, you're not going to kill 200-inch deer. You know, you could have a 10,000-acre ranch in Kansas in the heart of some of the greatest country in Kansas, and if there's not the gene pool for a 200-inch deer, you're not killing a 200-inch deer. You can't kill what's not there.
Right.
So time and location is what produces big deer consistently.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, let's jump into these stories. I'd love to hear. I know I've heard a couple of yours, but I don't know if these are any of the ones you're going to tell me. But
a defining moment, I guess, in when you hunt long enough and hard enough and you do it a lot, you kind of you start to see, I don't know, it's like a light bulb, right? Like I said, 2010, 2011 were grinder years. I thought I was making some good decisions. I know I was garnering a lot of education and learning from getting, you know, beat a lot. I wasn't lazy in the game, I could tell you that. In fact, it's funny, I actually hunted more days back then than I hunt now. I hunt a split season now. I do 5 days in the just before peak rut and 5 days just after, and I kill way bigger deer and way more deer now than I ever did when I hunted 17 days straight. Mm. Part of that is staying plugged in too. It's that mental game. I would challenge any hunter who hunt as diehard as anybody could be to hunt 17 days flawlessly and not oversleep one day, come out of a stand 10 minutes early. It's almost impossible. I couldn't do it. Mm-hmm. You start slipping. You start, I don't need to take a scent shower. I took one this morning. I don't need to do this afternoon. I haven't seen any good deer move in the mornings. You talk yourself out of not hunting, man. I mean, I did it too many times, and 17 days was too long of a stretch. But these are the days, the grind years, the 2010, 2011, 2012. I had this new farm, kind of just break into the story here, in Nebraska, southern Nebraska. God, it was an amazing place. It was 320 acres. No hunting. No one had hunted it for a long time. I was doing some work around the place for him. It was this elderly lady, and she's like, yeah, you know, come. So I go out there and help her and do some chores, basically. And she's like, you can come and bow hunt. And the stuff around there was a hard no. Like I said, I knock on doors till my knuckles would bleed trying to get permission. And back then, it just seemed like a lot of people were willing to give you permission, especially bow hunting. I got laughed at a lot. People think, yeah, you're going to kill a whitetail with a bow? Go ahead and hunt.
Yeah,
you know, nowadays I will say it's a lot different. But back then, man, 10, 12 years ago, you knock on a door. A lot of times people would say yes, but the surrounding farms just didn't let anybody hunt. So I knew my age class was there. The food was there, obviously. And I will say this, in that country where I hunt, I could throw a dart at a map and there's 140 to 160 class whitetails on pretty much any of those properties. Mm. It's finding that next day. It's finding that superior genetic that honestly is not the norm. That's the trick of finding the right property where you can really put yourself in position to kill those 170, 180 and better deer. I mean, they're not on every farm and they're not on most farms. Even on great Kansas ground, they're not on that usually. You might get lucky and find an anomaly one every 10 years. It's, you know, but most of that ground out there has got 140, 150, some 160 class deer just because the genetics out there are just, you know, they're just great genetics.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, this farm had that. I mean, it had, I never did see any deer that were 180s, but I mean, they had plenty of those mid upper high 60s, a couple 170 class deer. First year I ever got in there, scouted it, looked around, found some sheds, seen huge blazing rubs, some of the biggest rubs I've ever seen even to this day. And the place was just never touched. No one hunted it. Hmm. Well, I found this spot on the west side. It was all CRP. I'll kind of draw it out for you, but there was a road to the west. You couldn't see any of the good country from the west, and then there was a road to the east. There was no roads north or south for miles. I think it was probably 3-4 miles. It's this big chunk of ground. You can't really see into there. You have to park at the lady's house. It's just hard to access, and there's no, you know, I hate to say it, but because it happens, it's so prevalent, but there's a lot of poaching, man.
Oh,
you know,
yeah.
And people road hunt and they poach and they do things. you shouldn't be doing. And that's what I was talking about a little bit earlier about, you know, find these little hole in the wall prairie spots with some cedars, man. Cedars, that's if you take anything from this podcast, find cedars, you'll find giant bucks. But you find these little hole in the wall spots, you're going to find those big deer. And you got to get away from where people can go in there, especially even legally. I mean, if they have a legal tag and, you know, during gun season, Kansas is just blessed because they run that rifle season, post rut.
Right.
Nebraska runs right in the heart of the rut, which kind of hurts their age class a lot. They got great genetics, but a lot of their 2 and 3 year old bulls get no passes. So there were some really big deer in this place. It was set up right. It was CRP to the west. It had a couple cedar ridges that dropped down into the main draw, and it was just loaded with rubs. There was 3 fingers coming off this draw. It was incredible. I mean, it was loaded with deer. And basically, to put it short, man, I went in there and I put a tree stand in the absolute best spot. To this day, I'll tell you, it was in the best spot. You know what I failed to do? I'll tell you a couple things. First off, my entry exit routes, impossible. Short of getting dropped by a helicopter, there was no way I was going to get into that property without blowing deer out. I'd went in there the first time. I was watching as I kicked deer out in the dark. I'm like, okay, whatever. You make excuses too for yourself, right? You're like, I didn't cause that much intrusion. I'm good. You know, we all say like, right. I think I'm okay. You tell yourself that, so you keep into the fight. Climb the tree stand. I seen like 30 something deer that morning. It was still to this day one of the best mornings I've ever seen. Didn't see a big shooter deer, but I seen a bunch of bucks cruising everything the whole night. Well, I get out, bump some more deer because they like to bed in those cedars.
Right.
And I knew then, I'm like, man, this entry route sucks. Like, to the one point, I started coming in on the creek, like walking through the water. I sat it a couple days later, went back in there, half the number of deer. I went in there the next day, half the number of that.
Right.
The last couple times I sat it, I didn't see a single deer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I'm talking about, looking inward and entry exit routes. And I know this is, you know, something that's talked about a lot, but that was one big problem I had. The other problem I ran into is I had one tree stand set for 320 acres. Now, I came off of, you know, when you get a lot of success knocking on doors and getting permission, you kind of lose sight of what really matters. I think you spread yourself too thin.
Right. Too many options.
Too many options, man. I'll be straight up. I hunt 2 major farms in Kansas, and I hunt 2 major farms. Like, when I say major, I'm talking a couple, 200-300 acres. That's it, in Nebraska. That's all I hunt now. I used to, at one point, I had acquired, and this is no joke, over 100 square miles of private land on it. And it was, you know, and a lot of stuff I was getting permission on just to see what they'd say. So I knew, like, oh, this is probably getting hammered by other hunters. Or this is, you know, this is private. I mean, I have the whole map just marked up with green pins for yes, reds for no's, yellows for maybes, or I couldn't get a hold of them. I spread myself too thin. I'd have 6 or 7 or 8 farms. And I'd only set one tree stand set for each farm.
Mm-hmm.
So I have a north set for this farm, a southwest set for this, for farm number 2, a east set for farm number 3. Well, the problem is this. If you have a giant deer that you want to kill, forget hunting all the other farms. You need to focus on killing him, just him. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you got a farm that's got 2 or 3 big shooters, but you only can hunt with the north wind. I mean, I cut my throat too many times. I'd go out there for a week or 10 days or, you know, back and then I started cutting the trips a little shorter, and do 2 trips. That was kind of the transition of going into 5 and 5. But what if you have a south, southeast wind, southwest wind for 4 or 5 days? You got a slammer on the camera, but your options are limited because you can only hunt with the north wind. So I blew all the deer out, never killed a deer in 2012. And I learned some key things. First and foremost, there were multiple big shooter bucks on that property. I never even got a shot at one. I had one tree stand set for 1 or 2 variances of wind. And not to mention, it was, to this day, it's an impossible tree stand to get to. You cannot get into it. It's the best spot, but you can't get in there. If you were a ghost and you were sent free, like legitimately, and you weren't bumping deer, yeah, you'd probably kill a monster in there every year, mm-hmm. but you can't do it. It's impossible.
Challenge accepted.
I'm gonna put you in there, man. Hey, and I will fit it. Here is the caveat to that. You could kill the giant deer, but it better be in the first sit. You know, after sit 2 or 3, I think that's overlooked a lot too. I talk about whitetails, you know, almost every day to somebody. somebody that wants to listen at least. And, you know, I think some of the smartest animals are those big old, you know, those old mama does, man. Like, you know, they, when you have doe family groups that live in a place you're hunting, you better not mess them up. Because when you do, big boy's not coming through anymore.
Right.
I mean, why would he? If the girls are gone, why is he coming to hang out with you, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of mistakes made, man. We could sit there and dissect each one, but I would say the key factors is limited number of tree stands, one. Entry-exit routes were terrible. And I think in that scenario, those were the two biggest failures on that hunt. I could have got lucky again and killed a big deer, I guess, on the first sit before they really figured me out. But by the third sit, I went from 30 deer to none.
Mm.
I mean, so, and that's where I'm talking about looking inward, you know, and saying, what can I do better? I started to change my game plan a little bit from there and really, really took a hard look and said, what can I do better? You know, as far as scent procedure, the game of whitetails is honestly about minimizing variables and stacking your odds. The person who pays the attention to the smallest details is going to be the hunter who consistently kills the biggest whitetails.
I think that's hunting in general, man.
I agree with you. I do.
People argue with me all the time about that. I'm like, no, man. There's so many variables that you cannot control. So
right.
You better control every single one that you can.
Agreed. Like, I do some of the stuff I do, you know, for these whitetails. And my buddies are looking at me, scratching their head. They're like, dude, you were over the top. It's like, am I?
Oh, I get it all the time. People laugh at me.
Oh, yeah.
People laugh at me. And I'm like, why are you taking another shower? I'm like,
right?
Because. Because I can.
That's it. I mean, here's the thing.
If I'm going to do whatever I can, you know, I'll work with it. But
yeah, you know, I'll tell you this. I think, you know, the smallest little details, man, that's what's going to separate guys that are successful and not successful or consistently successful. You know, my buddies look at me and they're like, dude, like, I don't think this is necessary. And it's like, here's the thing. Honestly, John, I don't know some of the things that I do, some of my absolute OCD steps that I take. How much is it really helping me? I can tell you this. It's not hurting me.
Well, I'm going to tell you right now what it is.
Is it helping me 2%, 10%?
It's giving you confidence.
It is.
Confidence. Yeah. When you are confident, the more successful you are. I don't care. I don't care what you say. Like, I don't care what anybody. Confidence is key. If I hand you a bow that you've never shot before, and even though you probably shoot it pretty well, you know what I'm saying? Well enough to get the job done. And you go out there, chances are you're going to not feel confident and you're not going to have success. And like, man, I'll tell you right now, I started looking in the last couple of years at my success rate. I went, I want to say 15 or 16 years straight with an 85% success rate filling a tag.
Yeah, that's incredible.
Right? That's freaking, yeah. and I'm not a 1-2 tag a guy a year. I'm talking, you know, 7, 8, 9 tags, whatever.
State, right?
No, I had a couple of years where I had 12 or 13 tags. So, and then I look at the last couple of years and what's the difference? I've gotten really freaking lazy and a lot of stuff. Like my preseason preparation is nowhere near what it used to be. I don't do those confidence building. I'm this year, I committed myself to doing it again. I'm going to shoot 3 times a week. I'm going to do, you know, training the way that I used to train, that kind of stuff. And then, like you were saying, the whole, you know, send free game, all that, I started getting really lax on it. I'm like, oh, well, look at so-and-so. They got, you know, they're able to kill shit. And the guy walks around with like onions in his pocket.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah, like... But I started doing that and I'm realizing that was a big deciding or contributing factor of why I had so much success, I think, you know?
I think so too. I think another thing that can be said about success is being hungry, man. Like, any sport you do, you know, look at the professionals at, you know, football, basketball. The team that's hungry, man, is the team that goes to the top. The team that's been there a lot shorter than Cleveland Patriots, they're only about, I mean, now maybe not so much, but those guys always went, they had a shoe in always, but hey man, they stayed hungry. And I think the thing is when you garner a lot of success, it almost becomes, I don't want to call it expected, but Right. It's almost like, it's gonna come together because you know what? I've done it 85% of the time for the last 17 years. Like, man, I'm with you. Like, it's easy to put your guard down a little bit. And when you've had a lot of success, it's a little easier to back off and be like, man, I've been there. And essentially, I'm talking like for us, for like the Super Bowl, right? Like killing a big deer. For us, for me at least, it's like winning the Super Bowl, probably for those guys. Like,
right.
I put all this time and energy into the year. And specifically with whitetails, I would say that if you're hunting particularly one or two big deer on a property,
right,
that's
yeah, targeted.
Too.
Yep.
Yeah. If you blow it, your season's over, my friend.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm talking with a bow. I'm not talking about picking them back up on a 1,000-acre ranch with a gun in your hand. You blow it with a bow, you better be thinking about next year. I mean, you hunt a big bull in the mountains and you're in national forest and you can go hunt as far as you can see. And maybe you bump that bull. Maybe you can catch back up with him again. Maybe not. But you're still in the game.
Right.
Whitetails, a big buck, man, I'll tell you, you blow it with him, you better just start be thinking about how you're going to chase him next year. But I think that hunger is a big part of it. I think when you're really getting into it, and that's really what stoked my hunger is after that 2013 season, I'm like, look, I've been getting spanked here the last few years. I'm done. Like, I am revamping the game. I'm coming with new strategy. I'm going to apply everything I've ever learned, and I'm going to bring it. And that's what I did, man. I mean, I just came back in heavy, and I've been very blessed, man. I've been very blessed and fortunate that, you know, hard work and thinking of all the perceived negative outcomes that could come and how I'm going to get beat and defeated. Those defeats, man, make you stronger. If you let them, if you take your defeats, you can turn those into successes.
Yeah.
And, look, I'm not happy I got smoked 3 years in a row, especially at Kansas prices for a non-resident. I mean, but that's the price of admission. And look, I went to school a lot, getting schooled by them things, and I still do every year. But I've just been fortunate that the last seven seasons, I've been the guy coming out on top six out of those seven seasons.
Yeah, you're taking some good ones out of there.
Yeah, I a big part of that too, I will say, is this. Yeah, you find a spot that's got really big deer, like you find that genetic freak area where they've just got really big deer, hold on to that, man, with the best possible way you can. I mean, build someone a house if you got to do it. I mean, you can't plan for that. You can't. I can't look at a map. I can look at a map and tell you, man, this looks good. I like this. I like that. I like that it's away from roads. I like the cover. I love the cedars.
Mm-hmm.
But for me to be like, oh, there's 200-inch deer in there, that's foolish. There's no way I could tell you that. I couldn't even tell you if there's a 170 in there. Like I said, I mean, anywhere out there in Kansas, for the most part, at least where I hunt, and southern Nebraska and the stuff where I hunt, I could put you in a spot, and I'll know with certainty we will be after 140, 150, maybe 160.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes years to really spend the time into a place and run cameras and laying eyes on some of these and go, oh my Lord, like the spot where I've been killing some of the biggest bucks of my life, you know, of recent. Man, I'll tell you, I had my one buddy help me get him out of there. I had to blindfold him so he didn't know where it was at. Pulling him in there to get a deer out. I'm just kidding about that. But he's seen it. He's like, no way. I don't believe you. There's no way you could kill a big deer in here before he's seen that deer. You know, it wasn't even the best one I've shot in there. He was 188 inches. You know, and he helped me get him out, my buddy Pat. And he's like, he couldn't believe it. He's like, I cannot. I mean, it looks good, but it doesn't look like the traditional whitetail country, man. People think hardwoods, oaks, big giant cottonwoods, more mature the better. I mean, man, forget all that. Forget mm-hmm. that. Find yourself some stuff in the middle of the prairie with no road access, no visibility, with cedars. That's it.
Oh, yeah.
All the does are getting run around by the 1 and 2 and 3 year old bucks. Go run and hide in the cedars. When they do that, big bucks, man, I've said it for a long time, they're last to start, but they're last to finish.
Yep.
Those whitetails, they're the last ones to get up. They wait until that very moment when that first doe's in estrus. So they're not running all those does in there, but those does run into those cedars because they're hiding from them. A lot of those little bucks, man, they haven't learned about using their nose necessarily. They run around and they're doing a lot of eyesight running. Yeah, if you look at a field, like a really good field, mid, late October, how many does are in there? Oh, man, it'll be filled. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, whether it's an alfalfa field or, you know,
corn or something,
cornfield, you know, there'll be boatload of does in there. You go in there the first week of November and tell me how many does you see going in that field. None. One or two. And it's so funny. I'll see a doe out there. I'm like, oh man, look, there's actually deer out there. And here comes a little, you know, forky or little, you know, a little 6-point dogging them out. Like they blow them out of the fields, man. Like those little bucks use their eyes more than their nose. And then as they get older, the big guys, they know where to go, man. I learned that's another lesson. We could talk about that too. I was chasing this buck. The 188 I was telling you about. The year before there were two big bucks running together on this property and I killed his buddy. His buddy was a 5-year-old deer. He scored. He was my biggest whitetail ever. He was 241. I mean, just a freak nasty of a deer. Well, the big buck I was chasing then, he was probably in the 170s. So the very next year I was out there chasing after him, and I never did kill him that year. That was the 1 year out of the last 7 I didn't punch a tag. I was chasing specifically for this buck, and he was back in there again. He was 5 years old the year after I killed the big guy. That was in 2000. I killed the big 241 in 16. 17, I was chasing the big 180. He was probably one.
Is that the one that you had the you have it on video, that one, right?
Yeah, the big 19-pointer. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep. And then so the next year, 2017, I went in there for one buck. I mean, he wasn't, 200 inches, but the thing was over, he's 180. And I knew he was 5 years old that year. So I went in there chasing him, and I'll tell you, man, he got the best of me too. But that's where I really learned about setting out multiple, really getting – I basically didn't hunt any other farm. I could tell you straight up, I literally hunt 90% on a 320-acre farm, and I got enough stands in there, and I got perfect entry-exit routes that I just don't blow them out. But this buck went ghost on me, and it wasn't until 2018. Oh, that's what I was going to tell you about. I call it the mapping. I've noticed a lot of these big deer, what they do, end of October, 1st of November, they'll do what I call mapping. And what they're doing, and it's usually during the daylight, which is good. Unfortunately, I don't know what day it takes place. I've seen it as early as the 25th of October. I've seen it all the way to November 8th. So I guess if you sat in a tree stand for those 2 weeks, you probably have a pretty good chance of killing a really big deer. But it's funny. I'll run all these cameras now on a couple different farms, and every single year, the biggest bucks on those farms, I'll get pictures of them for one day only, and it's almost always during daylight, and I'll catch them on like 5 or 6 different cameras all the way from the south side. They'll hit every draw, basically, and it's before the does are estrusing, and what I call it is I call it mapping. Mm-hmm. All they're doing is they're figuring out where the does are coming and going from, where are they bedding, and they're mapping everything out, man. And once they map everything out, they're ghosts. And then that's when we get into the magical days of November 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th. I'll tell you, anybody listening to this, you need to be hunting on Veterans Day. I killed more big deer on November 11th than any other day. The 11th, 12th, 13th, 14th, it may be on the 11th, it might be on the 12th, might be on the 13th. One of those days on my spot, I'm going to see the biggest buck in that whole area come out. Guaranteed, every time. It may not be the exact same day every year, but it's between the 11th and the 14th.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they do. They map, then they're ghosts. So I go out there and check. I'm like, oh man, I got this slammer on my camera. Same with that 188. I had them on all these cameras. Like every draw, I have like all these fingers that come into me in the middle of the prairie. That's what, it's like all little hotels, like hotel row. Mm-hmm. There's just, and I got this buck. I mean, I don't barely ever get pictures of this deer ever. And here he is in one day, in a matter of a couple hours, he's on this camera, he's on this camera, he's on this camera, he's on this camera. So he's hitting almost all of them. And you just keep your eyes open. Keep your eyes open and watch and listen. And they'll tell you what you need to learn. I mean, that's what I call it. I call it mapping. I just think they go out there, they figure out the way the does are entering and leaving cover, where are their beds at. And they're just building this map essentially in their mind of, I know where the does are at in this draw. I know where the does are in this draw. And essentially, all I did is I put myself in between these two draws. And on November 14th, that 188 came cruising by, 10 minutes after the sun came up with his mouth open. Mm-hmm. I mean, broke from a hot doe, probably picked up that first hot doe around the 11th or 12th. Here I am, November 14th, and here he comes with his mouth open, and he came, 11 steps. I probably should have jumped out of the stand and stabbed him with an arrow versus shooting him with a compound. I mean, he was right under me. But I mean, when you see a deer that's mapping, hunt there. Have enough tree stands to hunt all the accommodating winds, whether it's a southwest wind, west wind, north, it doesn't matter. Like, do everything you can. Even if you have tree stands, like, there's multiple spots where I can see the tree stands from my other stand. Like, I'm sitting in a stand, I'm looking across the draw, I'm like, there's another stand of mine. Oh, there's another stand of mine. And if the wind changes, move. You know, I mean, that's the chess match of it, man. That's the my favorite thing about whitetails, is that chess match. Like, okay, where are you going? You know, a lot of times I come out and I'm whooped again, you know. I'll say, and if I hunt 10 days, I'm really blessed if I've had two or three big buck sightings. I've just been super blessed that one of those two or three, he comes in close enough and I can kill him. There's times I go out for 5 days, I don't see a big deer. You know, it's like, wow.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that break really affords you the opportunity, like we talked about just a few minutes ago, to come home, to collect yourself, take a break, clean all your gear, you know, do everything, break away from the mental grind. And what does it really do for me? It makes me hungry again.
Mm-hmm.
When I come home for 4 or 5 days during peak rut, which I don't want to hunt anyway, all the bucks are locked down with those for 24, 48 hours. They're not cruising that much because they don't have, well, at least where I'm hunting, there's so many does, they don't have far to go. Think about whitetails, and I'm sure it's the same, you know, with deer and, you know, with mealies and with elk and stuff, but think of it like a bag of popcorn. You know, you get those first early pops in the microwave, you know, pop, pop, pop. Those are your first few 5-10% does, right? Then you have, in a very short amount of time, pop, 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 you know, the whole bag dripping. And then on the backside of the bag, you're sitting there waiting to open up because, you know, there's going to be a few last pops and you want to get every last kernel, right?
Mm-hmm.
Hunt the first few pops, hunt the last few pops. And that will produce way bigger deer, way more consistently. Right. A lot of people, you know, I hear them on the even hunt shows, you know, I watch them, they're like, man, I want to hunt peak ruts. Like, do you really? Do you know what you're saying?
No.
They don't think you do want to hunt peak rut.
Yeah, that works when you got a, you know, 2-to-1 ratio, land. Maybe.
Hey, if you have endless land and I got a rifle in my hand, I want to hunt peak rut too, you know, because I can make things happen.
Right.
You know, when you are landlocked, and I'm telling you, it's harder now to get permission, at least where I'm at, and I'm sure you're probably experiencing the same things in South Dakota and other places you hunt.
Yeah.
Man, it has changed. Social media, the value of the high caliber animals people are willing to pay to go chase. I mean, the gig's up, man. I mean, you know, I think when I was really diving into, you know, whitetail hunting, archery whitetail hunting in, you know, 2008, 9, 10, 11, 12, I'll be honest, a lot of the guys I talked to, they were elderly farmers, 60s, 70s, 80s, most of them didn't even have a cell phone. They don't know. They're kind of disconnected a little bit.
Right.
What do you have now? You have their children taking over the farms, mid, upper 30s, 40s, maybe even 50-year-olds that are around technology. They do have Facebook. They do have social media. They know what the value of these animals are worth. I hate to make it sound like a money game, but there is a money grab in a sense. I mean, you know, if a place has got giant deer, they want to let me come out there and shoot them for free, or can they go get $5,000-$6,000 for a big whitetail?
Yep.
You know, so and just information is so much more widely dispersed, even in 10-12 years. I mean, there's just, you know, and we could talk all day about the decline. You know, I think there's so hard and so difficult now. I think I was talking to somebody over in on Instagram just earlier today about big muleys. You know, it's like, man, you're posting pictures of in the 40s and 50s and 60s of these, you know, pickup trucks with just hammers of big old slammer muleys. It's like, man, those golden days are pretty much behind us. I mean, those days, we're not going to see a lot more of like that. And muleys, man, they're just
sad.
You know, if I'm a it is. It's terrible. I mean, I can tell you 10 years ago, if I hunted eastern Colorado, I could chase 200-inch muleys. I can tell you right now, just a couple years ago, I finally gave up because I had about, not a ton of land, but I think of like 12,000 acres to hunt right on the Kansas-Colorado border. So, I'm telling you, 10 years ago, monsters. Now, in 4 years, I killed a 181 and a 183. Still respectable bucks, and I had to grind with a gun to kill those bucks. I know we're kind of getting off base a little bit, but talking about muleys, but whitetails, man, they just, their temperament and their forgiveness is slim. You know, they just, it's just a tough animal to hunt. And I used to get, everybody would laugh at me, but you know, like, oh, you want to chase them with a bow? Good luck. We can't even kill them with a gun. Well, what they do is they just drive the creek bottoms. They drive in a pickup truck. A lot of them, not everybody, but a lot of them would just, you know, drive the draws and they kick a deer out and they just start shooting, you know?
Right.
So I don't know. I just, you find a great spot, man. Do everything you can to control the amount of hunting, lock it down, preserve it, manage it for age class, and put a lot of stands in there, dude. I you know, find the cedars, hang stands. My number two, my top two tree stands where I've killed three of my biggest bucks, I've killed out of cedars. And that's another tip we can take out of it. I killed, it's funny, that 188. There was this one spot, and I don't know why I overlooked it. That was back in 2018. They picked the corn late that year. They picked it on the 13th of November. I killed them on the 14th. And on a neighboring property, not on me. There's no feed on me. But there's this beautiful, huge cedar, and it's in between two nice draws. And I look at it, I'm like, I could get a stand in that. And it's not news to me in 2018 hanging tree stands and cedars. That's something I've done for a very long time, and I love it. It breaks up your outline way better than any hardwood. It has scent that's constantly lofting cedar scent. I mean, dude, there's nothing better than sitting in a cedar tree.
Yeah, I like cedar.
As long as it's big enough. The hardest thing I think is finding a cedar tree that's big enough.
I've sat in a couple of trees that had no business having any.
Oh, yeah. And I mean, you can get away with a little more in the cedar. You know, like I said, it controls your scent a little better. Your outline's broken up completely. I'll suck in the inside of a cedar tree, and people, I mean, if somebody walked by, they wouldn't even know I'm in it. And honestly, it dawned on me. I'm like, I'm gonna put a tree stand in this cedar tree. I hunted the property for years and never thought to hang a stand in there. It's a tree all by itself. There's nothing else around there. I mean, there's a draw behind me and a draw that goes to the north, but it's just a natural pinch point because this fence, where a bordering fence, it kind of keeps those deer from jumping that fence, and they want to cut in on the southern draw. And hung a tree stand in there on the 13th, which I hate doing, by the way. Like I said, my number one thing going into a hunt is I want to be a ghost. I don't want deer to ever know I'm in that. If I have to pull out a saw, like, I'm pretty desperate. And that 188 was 6.5 years old. I had pictures of him, but I just couldn't catch up with him. It just seemed like everything was against me that year. I really thought I was coming back for a second trip, but I put this stand up in there, and the first time I sat it, man, I climb up there and that big old slammer walks right underneath me. So you just got to, you constantly, right? Like, if I hadn't hung that tree stand on the evening of November 13th, I wouldn't have killed him on the 14th of November. I mean, maybe I catch up with him later in the season, but I don't kill that deer. And that's where we get brought back into the chess match of whitetail hunting. Even in the middle of the grind, you know, and I'm doing something I would normally never do. I'm like, even when I was doing it, I felt so guilty. I'm like, oh my God, I feel like I'm committing this ultimate offense. I got a handsaw, you know, I'm not busting a handsaw, but I'm literally cutting in a new set on November 13th. Like, I cannot believe I'm at this point, but you kind of got to go for it, man. And I think there's, like I said, I mean, nowadays with my scent control, I feel I'm confident, like we were talking about earlier with the confidence. I'm confident with the steps that I take to minimize my scent. Right. And my entry exit routes through the prairie where I know deer. I mean, I guess a deer could walk by anything, right?
Right.
I mean,
yeah.
It's not impossible that a deer cuts my scent, but, you know, rubber boots, make sure all my stuff, like, I air dry everything. In my washer, in my Kansas place, you know, the washer never has seen, you know, Downy soap or,
right.
You know, never. I mean, it is literally, code blue. I mean, it's code blue, air dry. Like, there's nothing ever goes in there. You know, just taking all those little precautionary steps. And, you know, like we talked about, stacking the odds and minimizing variables. Because you're right, there are so many variables that I have no control over. I don't control when the does are estrusing. I don't control
the weather or the wind, any of it.
Yeah, I don't. I need to stack the odds the best I can. But the biggest takeaway I would say is, you know, entry exit routes, a lot of people talk about it. I would say don't hunt a bunch of farms. Zero in on one or two great farms that you know there's big deer. Set up multiple tree stands long before season opens or before you're going to hunt. You know, I go out there in September. August, I'm trying to stay away from chiggers, man. So I made that mistake one time. Don't do that. Don't go out there. Don't get so excited you're out there in mid, late July and early August, because they'll get you, man. Mosquitoes and chiggers will get you. But September's cool enough. It's still pretty hot. But I go out there and sometime in September, get all my preparation done. I'm sure I'm blowing a bunch of stuff around, but who cares? You know, I'm not hunting for 2 months.
Right.
But preparation, man, you got to prepare and hunt one or two farms. Don't make the mistakes. If I could cut anybody's learning curve, I'd love to do it. Don't make the mistakes of hunting five, six, seven, eight different farms. It's unnecessary. Now, I will say this. I will run cameras on other farms because you never know when a sleeping giant just appears. You know, it may be. So I have a couple other farms out there in Kansas and Nebraska I hunt that I have permission to hunt, but I haven't hunted them in years just because I've never had anything I wanted to dive in after.
Mm-hmm.
But run some cameras in there. You know, keep your little eyes open, you know, with those trail cameras. Utilize them. It's a great tool. But, you know, to be actively hunting, the days of making the excuse that you're going to let a stand cool down, those days are dead. They should be. They are for me. I don't need to let stands cool. I go in there with every step knowing that I'm doing everything I possibly can. I'm not reckless. I'm not blowing deer out. I'm not careless. I have multiple stand sets. Now, if I get straight, you know, and I'd like to have a couple stands, I have enough draws too in those 320 acres where I can really couple stands for a south wind, a couple stands for a north wind. I usually only have one stand for an east wind because we rarely get them where I hunt. So that's kind of like an emergency set where I do have one set for an east wind, which I think I've only had one east wind in like the last 3 years, and it was for one afternoon.
Mm.
But have it just in case, because look, one day you're gonna find an absolute slammer of a deer in there, and you don't want to be handcuffed with only one or two sets. I'm putting another set in this year. I'm chasing a buck in the same place, by the way. It's going to be pretty special, man. God willing, he's still alive, but I call him the Swamp King. I think he'll break 200 this year, but we'll see soon enough. We'll see how antler growth and everything plays out. But I'm hanging a tree stand in there that I've hunted that property since 2000, and I picked it up in 2013. 10 and 11 and 12, I got hammered. 13, I got this new property, and I've been on it since. And I can tell you, I'm hanging another tree stand. The last tree stand I hung was an 18 on that big cedar, and it's still there, and I'm still killing good deer out of it.
Hmm.
But this buck in general, I've narrowed down his core. Like, his core is figured out. And I'm going to hang another tree stand and another cedar, and I have a tree stand right now 60 yards from there, but he cuts this corner religiously year after year. He's 5.5 this year. As a 3-year-old and 4-year-old, they did the same thing. Like, when you see something, don't just write it off as a freak occurrence. When you see something, act on it. If that deer's still alive, God willing, he's going to do it again. And he's going to do it, and I'm going to be sitting in that cedar. And that's the game. That's what it is. Just take all the things, everything you've been given, and don't dismiss it and utilize it and put it into your game plan, and you're going to get in front of these giant deer. You just keep your eyes open, keep your ears open, and when you make mistakes, own them and learn from them. I've made hundreds. I know you've made
thousands.
Thousands, right? So, I mean, hey, man, that's what makes you better. You know what makes someone better? When you get beat and instead of blaming it on an external force, looking inward and saying, you know what? Yeah, maybe the weather sucks. Maybe this, maybe that.
I didn't accommodate for it. You got to accommodate for it. Yeah,
when I feel like my game is at top notch, I could tell you, you go out there, you know what I'm talking about. You got that chest sticking out of it. You're like, I'm the predator of the woods right now. I feel 1,000% I'm ready to do this thing.
Right.
Even with that, and I'm getting a couple hard days thrown at me, I still look at my game plan. I'm like, where can I do better? Even if I feel like I'm an A+, 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 oh, I'm only an A here. I need to bump that up. Even if you feel like you're playing it perfectly, still revisit. Don't get lazy. Don't get lax, and just start looking and saying, what can I even do better than I'm doing now? Even though it's still working, like, what can I even enhance just a tiny little bit? It's all about edging them out. You got to edge out these big deer. Yeah. And, you know, same thing with anything, with elk, sheep.
Yeah, you know? I had a bit of that myself a couple of years ago. I went back to hunt New York and had two big bucks that I was after. You know, and a big buck in New York was 140. Well, I mean, they get big, real big there too. I've had a buddy shoot a 206.
Jeez, that's a jumbo.
Yeah, and I shot a 160 something buck there too.
That's something special, man. That's tough to find out there.
Yeah, they're there. They're just, you know, they're a little bit few and far in between. But
yeah, it's not as prevalent,
right?
As like,
but so I had two bucks that were in that, you know, 140, 145 ish. One had shit ton of character. We call them stickers. And then there was another buck. And man, I don't know what it was. I only had three sets. I have three sets set up in there. And I don't have a whole lot of acreage. So we're talking it's two woodlots. One's like, I don't even know how many acres it is, but it's less, let's say it's like 10 acres. And then there's like a 5-acre swamp connected to it. And then there's a house, there's two houses and, you know, and a road. And then across the street, there's another, I don't know, 5 or 6 acres, and then another 3-4 acre swamp. But they're all interconnected. Well, it just keeps going like that. 3-4 acres, 5 acres, you know, and then a little bit of swamp. And they're just interconnected. So deer can come from, you know, 10 miles away and never touch a road. But anyway, so these two were just kept going, and I kept missing them. Like every time I was in this stand, they were on camera underneath my other stand. And man, I was just beating my freaking head up. I could not, you know, normally I have like I sit this stand in the morning because that's the wind, you know, and then I move to across the street and I get in this stand in the evening. And mainly because if I try to get into that stand in the morning, there's usually deer in this. It's like an oak flat and there's a bunch of acorns that down at that time that I hunt. And those does are in there and the bucks are coming in there, you know, harassing the does in the dark. So I really can't get in there in the summer, in the morning, because if I go in there, I bump deer out.
Right.
And even though it'd probably be, I bet you if I slept in that stand overnight, I'd probably kill a friggin' giant.
But yeah.
Anyway, so I just had one of those things, and I took a second. I started looking inward. What am I doing wrong here? What can I? And well, I mean, the shitty part is I didn't end up getting a deer anyway, but I finally like figured it out what I needed to do, and I just ran out of time and I couldn't stay. But
right,
it just, yeah, I got my ass handed to me.
And those are the best lessons, man. I learn more when I get beat than when I win. It's crazy saying that, because, you know, you get on that high when you kill a big deer, and man, there's nothing like it, man. You know how it is. You know, you kill a big animal and, you know, all that reward from the hard work and sweat equity and making multiple trips and hanging stands and prepping and talking about it and working it out in your own mind. Like, okay, I need to sit here. I need to do this. I need to do that. And having a solid game plan where you're not constantly second guessing yourself. I had that happen too much early on that I was, and like you said, you touched on a great point, but man, when I hunted 7-8 different farms, I would get so frustrated because I wasn't chasing any, you know, big bangers, but you know, if I was, I would like to think that I would have, you know, come to my wits and been like, hey, I need to, you know,
spend time on this one. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would like to think that. So, but I mean, it was funny because, you know, like I said, there's big deer on every one of those farms, you know, 40s to 60 class deer. I'd sit one, just like you were saying, I'd go sit, you know, property A, and I'd be like, oh, nothing. And then I go sit property B that evening, or maybe the next morning, and I'd pull the card. And it's like, oh my gosh, I had a freaking 155 right under my tree stand yesterday.
Yep.
So then I'd be sitting in there a couple of days, not killing anything. And I go back to, you know, maybe to property C, and I always missed them. It's like, you just, out of sake of keeping your own sanity, don't do it. Because I'm telling you, you're going to drive yourself crazy. Like, I'm sure that there's other, you know, of course there's other big bucks, but I mean, look, I'm one guy, I can hunt one stand at a time.
Yeah.
So put your eggs in that basket. Like I said, I actively hunt two farms in Kansas. I run cameras on a couple other farms on the chance that perhaps, you know, you never know, some anomaly pops up and there's some 210-inch whitetail. It's like, well, guess I got to change gears here. You know, I mean, that's why I do it. But you'll drive yourself crazy. I mean, you could buy 10,000 cameras and you won't have – all you'll do the whole time you're hunting is you're checking trail cams. But at the end, you just use them as a tool. Don't use them just, you know – they'll drive you nuts.
Yeah,
I love them.
We're not allowed to use them here anymore.
I just got
banned over here. I'm
like, they cut your guys' knees out from under you there.
So stupid. So stupid.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And I think that's something we're going to be all kind of experiencing at some point here. You know how it's going.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
You find something great, hang on to it. It's like a good woman. You find a great, great hunting spot, treat that like a great woman. Don't let it go.
Absolutely.
You know, whatever you can do. And I can tell you this, man, that spot that I was telling you where I learned so much in Nebraska, man, her son ended up taking it over and he doesn't like hunting. And I got the frickin' boot, man. And I did everything right. I sent out gift baskets and thank you cards and helped around the house. And, you know, she loved me. She really, appreciated me. I damn sure appreciated her, let me come out there and hunt. But you just never know when the expiration date is on some of these places.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah, absolutely.
You just don't know. So you gotta give it your all, man. And you got to hunt smart, hunt hard. Don't come out of the tree stand to eat lunch. And I know it's tough to say that. And even once in a while, I'll catch myself, daydreaming of climbing out of the tree stand to go maybe jump shoot some ducks. And who doesn't like doing that? You go 3-4 days in on a hard hunt. You want to go do something fun. But you never know when it's going to happen, man. We could have another conversation another time and talk about, what I've dialed in as some of the best times to hunt. And, that's a whole nother subject and topic entirely, but it really can happen anytime, mornings, midday, early afternoon, late after. I mean, you just don't know. Now I could tell you, I have basically like an equation of that works for me. Now I still don't miss
shift.
Yeah, man. Yeah.
I talked about that. I remember. Actually, I think we did that on my podcast, didn't we?
Yeah, we did.
Yeah, yeah. I gotta dig that podcast episode up and put it in the show notes because that was a good one.
No, yeah, super cool. But that doesn't negate the fact that a big slammer can walk by at 8 a.m. or 6 p.m. Yeah. So you just don't know. And you're only out there. I mean, let's be honest. We're all taking time away from family, loved ones, work, which is good to take time from work. But we're taking time away from our kids and our wives and,
Yep.
Of course, we're chasing our passion. It's what we live to do. But let's not forget, we are still taking time away from things that we love.
So make the best of it, for sure.
Make the best of it, man. Like, don't sleep in. Dude, I'm saying this, and I'm reminding myself this too, because it's easy to. It's easy to be like, I could get in there with, 20 minutes after first light. They're never going to know. They're never going to know. Are they? Are you going to miss them? You just don't know, man. So make the most.
I am fanatical about that stuff. I lose my freaking mind.
Right?
Yeah, I can't.
You're disciplined. And that's the thing
I don't know if it's disciplined or if I'm just fucking crazy.
I'm telling you. Hey, I'm telling you, man. My friends have come out and they're like, you are OCD with this whitetail shit. And they're like, I don't know why you think it's... It's like, hey, man, you do you, but when you're hunting with me, you're going to do it the way I do it.
Right.
Because you're not going to dick me up. I mean... Yeah.
Oh, I know because I've had this conversation. Maria's cousin hunts with me in New York all the time. That's my hunting partner. And yeah. For years and years and years, every year I'd go, I'd kill 2 bucks every year. And he wouldn't kill shit. And we're hunting the same ground. And I'm telling him where to go hunt, which stand. But he wouldn't do the scent control thing. He'd smoke a cigarette in the truck on the way over there. And finally he caught on and he's like, you know what? I got to get serious about this. And they changed. Now he's killing freaking good deer with the trad bow,
Wow.
It's devil's in the details, man.
That's what we talked about earlier. You have a choice and how serious you are is dependent on you. I can't tell somebody like, I can only lead them to water. I can't make them drink. You want to be serious about this thing and take it serious and you will kill the biggest deer of your life. Yeah. Or don't and just wing it. And maybe a blind squirrel will find a nut and maybe one day you'll kill a big deer.
Exactly.
I do this. This is my life. And not every year am I successful, but, I like to be successful more than not. I can tell you that. It feels good coming home with a big buck in the back of the truck versus licking your wounds and putting your defeats in the back of your mind. I mean, that sucks. And here's the thing, man. I tell people this too. It's funny because, my buddies, they go and play softball and, we play competitive flag football and stuff. And it's like, what happens when you lose a game? In 1 week, you get to play again and redeem yourself. You know what happens when you blow it on a hunt? You got to wait a year.
Yeah.
A year. Yeah. There's no instant getting better, feeling better about yourself. Okay. Like if you blow it, you're sulking for a year, man. Like, at least I am.
Yep. Well, I got a couple hunts and I'm still sulking from freaking 15 years later,
Yeah. But, I mean, man, anyway. It's the ones you can't get back. It's like, oh my Lord. And you get to think about it. It's like, and of course, people that are more serious about it, such as ourselves. I mean, man, it bugs us. If I just hunted for, you know, go out with the boys for second season deer tag and, you know, drink some whiskey at night, roll out of bed, climb a mountain. Man, it probably wouldn't bug me. But that's not us.
No.
We've taken this thing to a whole new level. And a lot of people are now, which I think is awesome. I think a lot of people are getting really, really starting to get committed. Just try not to take my tags. Everybody listening.
Yeah. I was gonna say, it's a double-edged sword, man.
It is, man, because it's like, it's great for the sport,
yep.
But it hurts you.
Yeah.
Right? It's like, you know, Colorado, more applications than ever before.
Kansas, oh my God. Yeah. We had 17,000 more than last year. And last year was it was a record breaker.
Oh man. So. The days of me drawing Arizona tags.
Yeah. Yeah.
Those are going to be fleeting moments now, man. But, you know, and that's the thing. So when you do get out there and you do draw the tag, give it 110% and don't overlook any details. And, you know, people might laugh and be like, man, this guy's out of his mind. I think he's way taking it too far. You know, I get down to bare boxers, dude, when it's 5 degrees out. My clothes ride in the bed of the truck. They're not even in my cab.
That's even more crazy than me.
Dude, and you know, and they're in a scent tote box. It's not even like they're just sitting in a bag. You know what I mean? And why do I do it? Because I need to know, right? Like, it, for my own peace of mind, like, there's no truck scent. There's no nothing. Like, they're in a scent-free tote with cedar. And the first thing I do when I get out there is I'll drive down one of the roads and I'll clip a few cedar clippings. Uh-huh. And I'll gently lay them into my scent tote box and I'll close it. So if there is any residual human scent, which there's bound to be some form of molecules floating around.
Yeah, of course.
There's going to be, right?
Yep.
Just leave the freaking, I don't even know if it's still a thing. Leave the fox piss and leave all that stuff at home. Don't eat it.
Nope.
Don't use, we'll talk another time about deer scents and decoys.
Oh,
and
stuff like I got the same philosophy as you.
Oh, yeah, man.
I'm just based on what you're saying.
Yep. Leave it in the truck, man. Save your money.
Yep.
Don't buy that stuff. And I will say this. I'll touch this real quick. One last thing for everybody listening is, you know, everybody's all this, you know, scent selling is a money-driven thing. It's, you are going to educate far more animals than you're going to have put in your lap. Does live there every day of the year. Those are doe family groups. When you bring in a different doe scent, even if it came fresh off a deer farm, and as fresh as it gets out of a cup, and you walked out there and you put it in there, I've never, and I stopped using this many years ago, I've never had a good reaction. They smell that, they start stomping in the dirt instantly, and they're leaving that danger scent that it may not even scare. It's not normal. Now, could you, I'll say this as a caveat, could you catch a cruising buck who doesn't know the does that live in that general area, and he picks up on it and maybe stumbles
over
you? Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I was going to say that's what you're aiming for.
You're aiming for the 1%.
Right. Yeah.
Because the chances that the first animal that hits that scent is a big buck, a shooter buck, they're pretty slim. Almost non-existent.
I say the caveat to all that is scrape hunting.
Right.
You actually want a,
sure.
You want a buck that nobody knows about pissing in the scrapes, you know? So the other bucks that are in the neighborhood that have been there come back and, oh shit, what is this motherfucker in my territory? I gotta put my scent back down here. I've killed quite a few because I usually hunt early October over scrapes. And that's kind of my main strategy back east. But anyway.
For sure. You know, and here's the thing too. I'll say this. I mean, we all have different techniques that will work for different parts of the U.S. I mean, you know, techniques that work for me in the Midwest and Kansas and Nebraska. But I think a lot of things you can take from it and apply it to whether you're hunting, you know, further east, and whether it's New York, or hunting further south or up north in Alberta, or, you know, Montana whitetails or whatever. I'm just, you know, remember to be a ghost. Just go in there, be a ghost. Don't let them know you're there. Take the precautions necessary, and you're going to kill more animals, and prepare way in advance, you know, hang multiple tree stands, and it's just going to put more deer on your wall, man, more deer on the table and more racks on the wall. And I think that's, once we all get there as a hunter, I think my thing is, you know, I'm just really, really trying to chase those 5 and 6 year old deer. I don't, it's just, You know, if I was just out there trying to stab it, just, you know, try to stab a deer, I'm really worried about it so much. But
right.
Once you start, you know, creating milestones for yourself and creating a standard that you really want to go achieve, you know, I think you just take it to a new level. You know, there's guys that are going playing professional sports. They're not going out there just to have a good time and just win a game or two. They're trying to win it all.
Right. Right.
And they weren't probably like that, you know, in the development of early on when my son, you know, he's 8 years old and he's getting into it. And, you know, of course, I'm not going to be like, Weston, you need to kill 5-year-old buck on your first deer. I mean, of course, I'm not that crazy. You know, he needs to garner success. He needs to go through the stages that we went through.
Right. Right.
You know, and develop his own approach. But yeah.
Well, all right, man. Well, I think we've given everybody some food for thought there, and I can hear my kids going crazy in the next room. This is why I never do podcasts at nighttime, because
yeah,
everybody's home.
Yeah, I'm surprised mine have been as quiet as they have been. I think my wife's downstairs with my kids and just trying to.
I've had to chase two of them out of my room already. They opened the door. I don't know if I hit mute fast enough or not, but they were.
Yeah, man, it's always fun, and it's a pleasure chatting with you, dude. I know it's always fun kicking around different philosophies. And that's the other thing, too. Like, I don't have all the answers. You don't have all the answers. And I think sharing different stories and what's worked and what's not, and take some of my stuff and I'll take some of your stuff. And you kind of just make your own little thing, and it just works. So,
exactly.
You know, and we're all students out there, man. We're all learning every time we go out.
That's what makes it fun.
It does. If it was all simple, man, look, I want to kill a big deer every year. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to sit here and be like, well, when I don't kill one, it's still satisfying. But I guess if I did kill one every single year and it wasn't, the chase really wasn't there, it probably wouldn't have.
No, it doesn't have the same effect. Yeah, for sure.
You know, when you do have a bad year or two and you come back strong and you kill a hammer, then, you know, those sit really nice and you think about it for a long time to come.
For sure.
So,
all right, brother.
Good chat, man.
I will talk to you soon. And
yeah,
hopefully we'll get to hunt again this year.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe we can do another one and talk about maybe really dial in on some specifics for whitetails. And when people do, when it gets a little closer to November, we can really hammer down on some different strategies, but something for people to mull over for the time being.
Sounds good. Hopefully I'll be coming to Colorado. We'll see what that.
Yes. You and I will be discussing tag situation here in a few weeks.
Awesome. Talk to you later.
Sounds good. Have a good night.
You too. Bye.
All right.
Well, that's it for this episode. Thanks for tuning in. Be sure to check out daysinthewild.com and be sure to give us a review on iTunes. Thank you, and we'll check you out on the next episode.